This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Usually, John Hoag is with us in July and January. He was not with us last July, and the reason is that I held off simply because there was so much happening, and so much was kind of in flux that I felt like maybe it would be better to wait until a little later in the season so that we can see if John can't project out a little farther. And you all know who John Hoag is. John Hoag has been coming to Dreamland since the 1990s, since I was on Clear Channel in the late 90s. And our earliest show with John is recorded is 2005, and this website basically started recording shows in 2004. So John's a familiar figure here. Welcome, familiar figure, to Dreamland.
Yes, I was just musing how much my figure has changed in all those years.
Oh, no, don't tell me that.
It's a little bigger figure sometimes, a little smaller.
Yeah, well, as you probably know, when you reach a certain age, you're what you are. I tried a diet, this Nutra System diet or something. I forget what it was called. And I it was a fasting diet, a serious fasting diet that lasted 11 days. And it was all worked out. You got powders and food, and I followed it religiously. At the beginning of the diet, I weighed 203 pounds. At the end of it, I weighed 203.6 pounds. I thought, well, I'm not going to spend any more money on this. I'm just going to do my best with what I've got.
That's where I'm at in my 60s. I just, here it is.
Right, here it is.
Here it is. I'm not growing any higher anymore. I'm just growing sideways.
Right, exactly. Well, nature is controlled by gravity, and so are we. John, wow, when summer rolled around, I thought I had the feeling that things were descending into a kind of chaos on planet Earth. And, you know, when you look at now at the climate situation, Bangladesh has been basically underwater for weeks. Huge areas of Africa are either in terminal drought or being flooded out. The Amazon is on fire, and the Brazilian government does not care. The Western United States is on fire, and there's very little we can do about it because the fires are so huge. Parts of Siberia are on fire. Huge craters are appearing in Siberia. There are one storm after another pounding the southern United States coastline. And what else could go wrong?
Welcome to the Roaring 2020s. I've been writing about how they would start with a bang on many fronts, and here we are. I wish I had been wrong about that. The other thing, too, is that although I didn't say much in our last show about the coronavirus, I think it was mainly because there was too many other things going on. I mean, this is a new thing to adapt to, even for somebody who's a forecaster, just reflecting on what you just listed. There are so many things happening politically, socially, economically, and certainly at the turn of the new year, we were almost at war with Iran. You know, the assassination of Soleimani was literally taking out their Eisenhower, you know, the guy who fought ISIS and actually defeated ISIS with Shia militias of Iraq. So I was just completely lost into that. I was kind of starting to notice it in February. And ultimately, it got to a point where It definitely ended up fulfilling something I've been writing about for a long time, the 2020s would see a major pandemic. And here it is. And so I've one thing that's not happened before in this kind of work is that I had to write two unplanned for literary children, and I'm still working on them. One is now a nearly 100,000 word book called Nostradamus, Coronavirus and the Pandemic Prophecies, which looks at Nostradamus's, from Nostradamus's point of view as a plague doctor, what can happen in his prophecies, which are a catalyst. His plague prophecies are a catalyst for so many things that are also involved in his prophecies. So suddenly this 20,000 word book became a 100,000 word book. And then I'm still working on it. And then suddenly I realized, just to jump around a bit, that as we got into the election cycle, that I started looking at the astrology of the presidential election. I mean, I'm doing what I usually do since 1968 and pick the popular vote and also by what the margin is. I'm 13-0, for those who don't know, for the last 48 years of doing it. That would be the last cycle in 2016. But I'm looking at this one, number 14 attempt, and I'm looking at the astrology, and long story short, I'm writing another big book about this. Just in the last 6 weeks, I've put 40,000 words down, and the astrology, and, you know, Whitley here has half the book to look at because he's a subscriber to Hope Prophecy, and the other half is coming for my subscribers in the second half of this, end of this month. But I look at these astrology figures. I look at the inauguration day stars that are really the birth, what you could call in judicial mundane astrology, the birth day of a presidential cycle, 4 years. I'm also looking at the fact that we have now completed one single orbit of Pluto, the planet that defines great generational changes and degenerations, to create more generational changes, you know, epochal changes. And in its grand orbit of it, the Plutonian year is 248 years. And the last time it was at 27 degrees Capricorn was during the signing of the Declaration of Independence and basically giving birth to the bigger picture, because the outer planets in astrology talk to us about the world. Jupiter to Pluto is all about the world. The inner planets are about the individual relating to the world. And so the thing I saw, there is this conjunction of all these planets coming into the election day. It's the most ominous stuff I've ever seen. Portentous. And it's literally, the main issue is Mercury, the mindset of people voting, is running into a wall of all these, a dirt and rock wall made of all these melancholic aspects with Capricorn, Earth sign, that I've never seen anything like it. And on top of that, it's all transiting over natal U.S. chart Pluto. Which, you know, to out of the psychobabble and astrobabble, what that means is, and then I'm thinking, I may end my streak. I may actually stop doing these predictions at 14 because I'm not sure there's going to be another election, at least as we have known this country. And I have the same feeling looking at the astrology of Inauguration Day. And it doesn't matter which one is chosen. It's they're just two different kinds of breakdown of the system that they're going to lead. If it's Biden, it's a different kind of breakdown. If it's Trump, a different kind of breakdown. And I've just never seen anything like this in all 40 years I've been doing this. And so It's certainly the end of America and its first grand Plutonian cycle as we've known it. I've often said, and we've talked about it over the years, that I've always predicted that a civil war was possibly likely coming to the United States in the year 2020. I started saying that in 1997. I think that was around the, I think that might have been the first year that we actually did shows on Dreamland. And so there's that. There's also the very important thing going back to COVID-19. I have never seen clearer, in the clear, statements about a plague or a thing in the future than the way Nostradamus talks about it. He is describing, from a point of view of a European from the 1550s, he's describing exactly where it came first into Europe, in northern Italy, and then into France and Spain. He calls it the great husk-like shell, kind of the prickly husk and stuff, which is exactly how these red and white symbolic models of the virus that everybody sees on TV for months. Well, he's seeing it too. He's also describing it using synecdoche, which is where you do a smaller thing to describe a bigger thing, which he does a lot. It's a 16th century word game. There's about a dozen that he uses, all untranslatable titles for each grammatical game. But anyway, one, to be a good Nostradamus scholar, you have to be able to read 16th century French and get into all the little tricks that they like to do with their languages and classical metaphors and all that. So he describes both New York and Wuhan by talking about the sloping park. So I started to think, okay, a sloping park. Is there such a thing in Wuhan? And I started to, I started putting out feelers, and I got some answers from several contacts and then verified it. It's officially called the Yangtze Park, but it's a sloping riverbank park, and people call it the sloping park in Wuhan. There's also Park Slope in Brooklyn, which means the smaller neighborhood describes the bigger city, New York. And he's talking about both places being hit hard. There are a lot of people in this field that are, for instance, a lot of people are constantly looking, give you an example. Some people even publish major books and get on TV, and they're always unconscious of the fact that whatever you try to find in Nostradamus, because he's nebulous, and if you don't know the French, you'll find it, and it will be your own deception. I learned early on in this, 40 years ago in this study, how easy it is to do that. So I am not one to jump on something and say, yeah, Nostradamus thought. I'm actually one that's very hard resists doing that. But the things that I'm going to show in this book on the coronavirus and Nostradamus' prophecies are quite amazing. How he's just hitting it. And it makes sense because Nostradamus was a plague doctor, one of the most famous plague doctors in history. So the book also looked at his own account of his own battle with the plague in Aix-en-Provence, the capital of Provence, where he fought it almost single-handed, except for a couple of apothecaries that hadn't escaped town for 270 days. And some of the amazing stories, and like I think he even suffered a little PTSD from it. I mean, one thing he was haunted by was, there are a lot of things that people did in the 16th century is very similar to what we do now. The social distancing, and not gathering more than five people, being sequestered in your house. They would usually paint a white cross on your house to mean that you were sequestered, couldn't get out. They didn't know why rats were a problem, but they always seemed to be a lot of rats and plague was around, and that goes all the way back to the Book of Samuel in the Bible. So they just knew that, well, we ought to kill them. and that seems to make things better. They didn't understand about bubonic fleas. And so, but it is quite surprising to see how close to the mark they were without the help of antibiotics, because they didn't exist then, or penicillin, or an understanding of bacterial infection. They were right on the right track. And this is the same plague doctor who later then predicted that the thing long ago forgotten, it's about 10 years after he was fighting the plague, the secret long ago forgotten shall be rediscovered by Pasteur.
Long ago forgotten?
Yeah, the secret.
But we have to take a break now, but when we get back, I'm going to ask you just what that means. Free Dreamlanders, listen up. John will be with us on October the 10th, Saturday at 11 a.m. in the subscriber video room answering your questions. Be sure and come to the subscriber video room on October the 10th, 11 a.m. Pacific, to have a one-on-one with John Hoag and other subscribers.
Support UnknownCountry.com and its great mission to make contact happen. Use our vast archive of interviews, meditations, commentaries, news, and Whitley Strieber audiobooks to expand your mind and your understanding of close encounter. Meet others who have similar interests on our active free message board or in our subscriber comments and Wednesday night chats. There is no other site like Unknown Country in or out of this world. Go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe today. Earthfiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website, offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on earthfiles.com.
We're talking to John Hoag. His website, hoagprophecy.com. You can go there and immediately become involved in John Hoag universe, which is this universe as interpreted by John Hoag. And it's an absolutely fascinating place to go. It always has been. So, Pasteur, tell us what were you getting at just a moment ago?
Well, In the deep study of Nostradamus' life, and which I wrote the biography, first actual full body biography of Nostradamus was written by me in 2003, called Nostradamus: A Life and Myth. And in the study of it, I was surprised to see that even as far back as the first century BC, some doctors were theorizing that there might be some incredibly small particle that people couldn't see that might be actually what's responsible for making people sick. And so just like the curvature of the earth and all that were actually ideas that were in ancient times that were well known, people were theorizing. I mean, even back in the Vedas of ancient India, some of the oldest books in the world, are trying to describe what is an atomic atom. And ultimately, there's a conjunction in the Rig Veda that's described that hasn't happened for 70,000 years. So there's some very interesting stuff. That's a whole other world to go into. But in the case of this, the secret, therefore, is actually revealed by the clues, as I'm going to recite that prophecy fully again. The secret long ago forgotten shall be rediscovered by Pasteur. This will take place at the end of a grand lunar cycle. He will be revered as a demigod-like figure, but by rumors as foul as passing wind, he shall be dishonored. This quatrain 25 of Century, Volume 1 of Le Prophétie, the Prophecies, his magnum opus, History of the Future, is describing. First off, the key is there's only two times in all the words Nostradamus uses for prophecy that he uses the term for shepherd, pastor. And it's for the pastor of Rome, which is clearly about the Pope. But this time he's using it with an astrological hint. The grand cycle that he's talking about happened in 1535 and ended in 1889. So that's a lead. So was there anybody named Pasteur or a pastor or shepherd that did something significant about discovery in year 1889. Well, guess what? Louis Pasteur Institute Pasteur was founded in 1889. This is the man that discovered germs and pasteurization and had a major medical breakthrough in the help of that would ultimately lead to the discovery of penicillin, discovery of antibiotics, and things that made huge breakthroughs in medicine. And so the secret is probably that. Now, I'm not sure that Nostradamus knew that 10 years earlier when he was fighting the plague. But when he was writing his prophecies in semi-retirement in Salon-en-Provence, he must have had a flash of insight about it. And it remains one of several hundred of his prophecies that are really jaw-dropping, amazing. I mean, there are many of them that are open to interpretation, will forever be so, mainly because he's often looking at potential futures. He's the first major prophet to prove that prophecy isn't written in stone. It's constantly on the move. So here's the thing, though, that I've always been looking for in evolutionary study of what is the great pandemic then that I've been trying to track down for 40 years in my writing. And in the book, I go through the process of these, it's like detective work of seeing what major pandemic is he talking about. And he always keeps talking about it being a blood plague. Now, there's that first one that came up, it came up in the 80s, and I considered possibly it was AIDS, as transmission by blood. And then there was the problem of the bird flu, of swine flu, H1N1 strains that were notoriously famous for killing 50 to 100 million people in 1918 through 1920, the great Spanish influenza, which in the book, I renamed the American influenza because it first came there. It's only called the Spanish influenza because of something similarly happening that we have with our own COVID situation, where the press is kind of not on top of it. In fact, they were censored because World War I was starting, and the American troops who were infected were actually marching off to Europe in the boats, and the American soldiers infected the British and the French, and then through hand-to-hand combat, they started to infect the Germans and the Austrians. And because the Spanish were not in the war, the news could report the sickness of King Alfonso. And so that's why it's called the Spanish flu, all the other countries were censored as treason if any reporter talked about it, because it would ruin the war effort. So, you know, the American influenza was spread because of that all over the world, and it killed 50 to 100 million people. And then you have H1N1 coming up again in 2009, which killed about 250,000 people in the world, 12,000 in the United States. So I look at that too. But then in the middle of writing all this, because we're all discovering more and more exactly what COVID-19 is, it's now clear when there were enough autopsies to be done around the world, they were coming up, the coroners were coming up with the same conclusions, that this is also a blood plague, that it actually goes into the cardiovascular after it ravages the lungs and creates clots in organs and creates, most of the people died from heart-related heart failure, stroke, from clotting. And so this is also Nostradamus's blood plague. And the astrology keeps pointing to this all happening now. And it's not the only plague. He talks about several plagues happening simultaneously. So in one chapter, I tried to look at that and say, okay, let us not presume from the 21st century that we know what he means by plague. And if you study intimately the 16th century, you realize that a lot of things we would never call plague, people then called plague, including the common cold. So the other thing, too, is that some of the plagues he's talking about sound like radiation from nuclear attack, or a plague of global warming, a plague of fires, as All of us in the West Coast, 50 million of us, have been breathing shallow for the last several weeks because the fire fogs have been unbelievable up here, and we were not even the worst people hit in the Seattle area. Eugene, Oregon, those areas, I have contacts down there telling me horrific stories. They said the air smelled like burnt creosote.
My God.
Yeah, it was, and they were having AQI readings of foul air from between 400 to 650. And truly, it was reported, at least on RT and RT America, that, which are some of the better news sources out there, not so partisan, is that we had the most polluted air in the world, much worse all along the West Coast, especially in Oregon and Northern California.
What was it like where you live? I know you're in on an island in
about 40 miles north of Seattle. Yeah. Well, there was a whole week I couldn't see the sun. We couldn't even see an orb. The fire smoke was on the deck, on the ground, and sometimes visibility was less than a quarter of a mile. I couldn't see the trees, you know, about a third of a quarter mile out away from me. And I didn't go out. I mean, it was, I had to use my yoga breathing techniques from whenever the pollution got bad in India, where you kind of do a rapid but shallow breath that kind of feeds you a minimum of breath that you need. But, you know, being that I'm kind of a breatharian kind of guy, I like to breathe deep. It slowed me down a bit. It was definitely, I'm still recovering from it now that the few days now we've had rain and it's over. But these fire fogs started happening in 2015, and they never had happened before. I've lived here since 1986 in the Pacific Northwest. And, you know, you get some fire smoke in high altitude. You know, having coppery skies is not unusual in the summers up here. But in 2015, when we've really, in the last half of this decade, starting to have these incredibly hot global temperature years, we began to get these apocalyptic fire fogs. Usually at the end of July into August, and this one was late. It came in September, but they sometimes will last right up to Halloween before the what we call the winter monsoon happens up here, and 9 months of rain. So there are a lot of things on all levels of life that are happening in the 2020s, and the 2020s are this year is just not one freak year. This is a decade. Well, and it's going to get more intense.
That is something I have been very much worried about, because people say, "Oh, 2020, what a terrible year," but I think to myself, it's not the end of something; it's the beginning.
It is the beginning. According to what I can see, prophetic sources, what I've been anticipating writing about, unfortunately, it's 100% so far. And I wish it weren't. One of the hard parts about doing this work is the curse of being accurate. One does not ever want to see these things come. But then the next thing that one has to do is use the intelligence to move beyond that initial feeling, allow that grief to happen. But now it's like, okay, what positive way we can look at this? This is a time that the human race, individually and collectively, must evolve. It's probably something that has happened to every potentially sentient life form in the universe, in different civilizations around the universe, that they reach a point where they become magicians who can alter the climate and the planet. They become unconscious terraformers. And then suddenly when they become aware that there's too many of them, that they're using too much of the resources, that they have to basically collectively come to an understanding that can only happen when shocks hit them over the head and wake them up from their robotic behavior. So I see these shocks, and there are many more coming. This is a rehearsal for the rest of the decade.
Yeah.
I see these shocks, yes, as challenges to wake up and then use our intelligence rather than, because the greatest enemy in this fourth turning, this emergency period of 80-year cycle, is planetary. And the enemy is stupid with a capital S. And stupid is the ultimate antichrist, because it is us acting in an unconscious way, if we were bark beetles, that would be fine. We could just eat up the forest. It becomes an old dry wood forest, and it just so happens nature sets off a fire with a lightning storm, and the bark beetles are burned up. Bark beetles don't have to think about being gardeners of their world or protectors of their planet. Their whole life is to consume, consume, consume. Now, for a human being with such a big brain pan to be behaving with the morality of a bark beetle, you get what you deserve, humanity. And one of the things that can happen, because nature is not sentimental with our projections and belief in imaginary friends in the heavens and all of that, nature will take its course, and if we alter the balance of our nature, nature will apply a new balance, but that balance may not be able to sustain a civilization. And such is the case. That is nature. It has no judgment. You can yell and scream at nature, but nature is just responding to your unconsciousness. And so, wake up. And if you wake up, then the other thing I've got to say, that I came to the same conclusion after many, many years, because I'm also working on a book about the climate crisis, and that will come out next year, along with the delayed Roaring 2020s book, because of everything that's going on.
Yeah.
It's like I didn't plan to write 200,000-word books this year that were unplanned, but they were necessary.
Well, before we go on, though, we must take a very brief break, and Free Dreamlanders, this is all for you. Enjoy. John will be with us on October the 10th, Saturday at 11 a.m. in the subscriber video room answering your questions. Be sure and come to the subscriber video room on October the 10th, 11 a.m. Pacific, to have a one-on-one with John Hogue and other subscribers. There was an incredible UFO wave going on back in 2007. Forgotten all about it? Well, we haven't on unknowncountry.com, and you can still explore it with one of the leading experts who was involved personally, Brian Vike. Listen to this.
A good friend of mine, he's in the UK, believe it or not, and of course I'm in Canada, and between the two of us, just two of us, we pulled in. Now this is going to be a rough one. I think I stopped it at 430. For reported sightings for Canada alone in 2007.
This is an excerpt from one of literally more than 1,000 different episodes of our various podcasts on unknowncountry.com. But how do you access them? We have a powerful search engine that enables you to access them by subject, but now also, when you go to the podcast drop-down menu, you will see at the bottom Podcast Archive. This takes you to lists of all of our podcasts organized by year. And you can click on any year and browse through everything that's in that year for that podcast. This is a huge website, and we work more every day to make it accessible. For example, subscribers can now listen to the subscriber version of Dreamland on an app. There are a number of apps out there that will accommodate this, and subscribers will find more information about it in the subscriber section of unknowncountry.com on the Dreamland page. So for this and so much more, the time to subscribe to unknowncountry.com is right now. Go to unknowncountry.com and subscribe to this website. We need you. And I can assure you, you need us. As always, Dreamland's theme music is The O of Pleasure from Ray Lynch's beautiful album, Deep Breakfast, available at raylynch.com. We're talking to John Hoag, his website, hoagprophecy.com. It's easy to get involved with John Hoag on his website. There's a free newsletter. There are books. It's all kinds of stuff you can get there. Some of it you have to pay for it. Some of it you don't. And it is absolutely fascinating, of course. Okay, so John, let's just get right back to it.
Yeah, I'm going to give you kind of a broad astrological overview of this 2020s decade. We are in the final 4 to 5 years of what is it's a generational thing that happens called the fourth turning. It's a cycle that Strauss and Howe, two futurologists, put together. And the last time, it's generational, 20 years, 8 20-year cycles. The fourth turning is usually when we've entered a 20-year period of crisis, and the turning is coming out of it. And then there's following a 20-year period of, and it's mostly related to Anglo-Saxon history, but really crystallizing now into the form of the United States. So you have first the crisis, and then the fourth turning is you start the first generation, which is the recovery and expansion, and things are rebuilt. And then that follows another 20-year period where America's in a cycle of at its peak, and that's usually when the society is at its peak, that people have the luxury to be existential and question things and experiment with love, experiment with hippies, drugs, and new social ideas, Eastern thought, and all of that. And I'm defining the 60s and the 70s, which is the second generation that comes in. By 1985 or so, we ended up having the third 20-year cycle, which is the decline of systems, government, politics, society, economy, which leads to an economic crisis like the 1930s was, and that started roughly. There's always a lot of twilight between day and night, and similarly with ages. And so around the mid to late, around 2008 to 2005 to 2008, when we had the Great Recession, which, by the way, is what they called the Great Depression until it was over. They never called it the Depression until 1942. They call it the Great Recession. But, folks, this is a depression. And what happened literally in 2008 is the economy had, as Max Kaiser of Kaiser Report sagely said, had a heart attack and died. And now it's been on IV, looking like it's alive, looking like it's doing a 2% GDP growth on average for the last 12 years. And people have been turning that sow's ear into a silk purse of that somehow that low GDP growth is a good sign. But really, it's like, yeah, the heart's beating. As long as I keep applying my hands to his chest, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, waiting, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, waiting. Yep, the heart's beating. But if I stop pumping IVs into him and pumping his chest, that economy, that fiat economy, which is not, which has been floating since 1971 without a gold standard, is going to stop beating. And so this great boom economy that the president has been using as his major campaign sales point for second term is actually a great big bubble of quantitative easing. And so that to infinity now, even considering negative interest rates, this is the kind of stuff, the unraveling that happens in the crisis, planetary crisis 20-year cycle. So basically, when we started the 2020s, we're now in the final 5 years of the most climate. It'd be like the depression that ended up into the Second World War. The climax of the last one was the Second World War. And often it happens that when you have economic world depression, you end up having world war as well. So hopefully we won't do that. But there's things that are out there in the next 4 years that I have never seen. If we get through the next 4 years, we'll at least, I think, be through the gauntlet of not having World War III with nuclear weapons. I have never seen us closer to it suddenly erupting at any moment from some wrong move than the next 4 years.
What makes you say that?
Well, a couple things. One of the jokes at the end of my book on the presidential predictions is I say, I do a little apology at the end of the book saying, you know, this is an intense book, even for me. And when I look at it, I almost feel like, to my audience, it's like you're the firing squad. And the officer of the firing squad, I'm asking, what are my options? And he says, well, you can take one between the eyes or two in the chest. And then I say, do I have any other options? And when I look at, and it'll be the summation of the astrology of both, because what I'm doing is I'm looking at, in the book, we first, briefly, I'll give you a brief idea of the book. We start with the story of the curse of Tecumseh, and who was an Indian general of a Great Lakes Alliance Confederation of Indians, of Native Americans who were trying to fight the white encroachment into their lands. His older brother, whose name I can't really pronounce really easily, but he was called the Prophet. He was the political leader. His younger brother was the general. When he was defeated, Tecumseh, by William Henry Harrison, who later became President of the United States, in 1840, the Prophet said, I tell you, Harrison will die. And when he does, every generation, the white people will lose a chief. Now, that sounded like just an angry man who'd been defeated, but a dozen years later, when Harrison was elected president, basically on his successful battles of the Thames and Tippecanoe, which made him a national hero against the Indians, he was in the inauguration, which happened in March in those days, in a driving winter rainstorm, and he took off his beaver hat so people could see his graying locks, so they could see him, that it was him who was speaking. And he caught pneumonia and died. It was the shortest presidency in history. And people said, well, you know, that's a shame. Oh, there was that curse. Oh, that's too bad. It's probably just a by chance. 20 years later, Lincoln is elected in 1860. He's assassinated in his second term. And there was a civil war. 20 years later, Garfield is assassinated in 1880. He was elected. In a year ending in zero. 20 years later, McKinley, elected in his second term, assassinated. 20 years later, in 1920, Warren G. Harding dies of heart failure. He was elected in 1920, 100 years ago. 20 years after that, 1940, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, decides to break with tradition because of the oncoming war, and that's in the fourth turning, the last one. And decides to run a third term. He wins. He's right about being there for the war, and he ends up leading, being one of the major leaders that brought victory to the Allies and Soviet Union against the fascist forces. He then dies in April of a brain aneurysm in his fourth term. So now, 20 years after that, we're in Dallas. The Bruder's film is running, and Jack Kennedy gets killed in his third year. And then 20 years after that, we end up with Ronald Reagan coming out of, I think it was the Washington Hotel or something, and he's coming with his entourage, and Hinckley, the cuckoo lone gunman, starts firing point blank at his entourage, and Reagan gets shot in the armpit. The bullet lodges near to his heart. Because he's so healthy, no one knew how seriously ill he was, but he had almost bled out. So he just survived dying. He's the first president in history, 20% of which our presidents have been killed in office. He's the first one to survive. And so it felt, well, this what made 1840 more important than all these things coming at one after the other? And I looked astrologically at it, and what I found was that each of these election years, picking a president at the year ending with a zero, had a Jupiter-Saturn conjunction. It's a very heavy-duty conjunction because it's where Jupiter, expansion, higher-minded planet, embraced by Saturn, reality-giver, illusion-destroyer. Therefore, it limits your dreams if your dreams are illusions. They're very powerful outer planets that basically buzzkill each other's powers and create a dead zone astrologically. That in ancient times, people who were more sensitive to the world and the cosmos would never pick a leader on these conjunctions. This is a time to meditate, to review, to reflect upon what happened in a generational cycle of 20 years, because these happen every 20 years, and atone. It's more like, rather than have an election, they should have a Yom Kippur. And, you know, a time of atonement and reflection. And then in the next year, pick a leader. But in America, we're not connected to that. So it perhaps with the energy of the curse of Tecumseh on top of it, So up to Reagan, it looked like it had a certain, all those white chiefs every 20 years died. But Reagan didn't. Why? Astrologically, it was the only time the conjunction happened in the air sign since 1840. Otherwise, it was mostly in earth and mostly in fire signs, which means more potential violence. But so air is softer, so it didn't happen. So then I started wondering, has the curse evolved now? Is it changing? Is it expanding its scope?
Well, let's take our final break now. And then afterwards, Free Dreamlanders will get to find out, is the curse changing? We'll be right back.
When Plato's ancestor Solon received the story of Atlantis from this Egyptian priest, the Egyptian priest said to him, "Many and manifold are the destructions of mankind. You have know of but one. But you Greeks are like children. There are many, many destructions of mankind by all various types of means."
That's an excerpt from a show with Rand Flemath, who wrote the original book about crustal shift that is based on the theories of Charles Hapgood. There are three Dreamlands with Rand over the years. That one's from 2015. He goes all the way back to 2004. And they are totally relevant and totally fascinating right now. All you have to do to locate those shows is go to our search engine on unknowncountry.com and input the words Flemath, F-L-E-M-A-T-H. His last name, and all of the shows will pop up. And then if you want to listen to these incredible programs, literally available nowhere else on earth, as far as I know, you can subscribe to unknowncountry.com for $4.95 a month or $39.50 a year. And when you do, you get a literal wealth of enjoyment from this website, including the full-length Dreamland every week, every new Dreamland that comes up. So subscribe to unknowncountry.com. Go to the site and click on the subscribe tab. Get started. Now subscribers can also listen through any app that accepts subscription-based podcasts. One that we use is the Castro app, and it works great. You can have Dreamland pushed to your app every week. Subscriber now, just as you can, as a free Dreamlander. We're talking to John Hoag. His website, hoagprophecy.com. Go to Hoag Prophecy, sign up for his newsletter, and get involved. This is so fascinating. John, okay, let's get back. Has the curse evolved?
Well, I had to wait another 20 years to see if it had, because the next election was 2000. And in that election, Bush versus Gore, there was the famous Florida recount, which the Florida Supreme Court was going to allow a recount of the whole state. But it got stalled in the Supreme Court, and then Al Gore, just with still a lot of legal options in his hands, just dropped the whole situation, which has been proved. I went back into the study of, because people did recount the votes of the entire state. It didn't get a lot of press, but in the book I have all the sources and all the conclusions that showed that if Gore had gone back to the state Supreme Court of Florida and said, give me, decide what is the grounds of the rules for recount, you know, so it's about undervotes and overvotes. And if an overvote is when somebody punches through the chat and also signs off on it, so it's double vote. The other is where it looks like the chad, the undervote, looks like it was trying to be punched through. But that's where all the dangly chad issues came, people cross-eyed and all that. Well, some poor fellows, funded by several news agencies, went and counted all those overvotes and undervotes using all the five possibilities of that the Supreme Court could have chosen for recount. And in every single one, Gore won by 90 to 160 chads. So he won Florida, and he bugged out before before they had the recount. But he actually won Florida. So what we have here in the 20 years since Reagan is a political assassination. You know, the man actually did win the popular vote of the state, which means he won the electoral votes that would have carried him over to be president. So this is what I call political assassination. And then what happened after that is this thing is beginning to be not just about presidents, but the democracy of America itself and its breakdown. Because what happened after that? The next three presidents, Bush, Obama, and Trump, all have astrologically the aspect of delusion par excellence, a sun squared Neptune. And what that means is, it was in the birth chart of Bush, so Bush used to talk to God, and God told him to get in quagmires in Iraq, which we're still in. God told him to get in quagmires like Afghanistan, we're still there. And ultimately, this is the guy that got five messages from intelligence agencies. Most people only know about the August sending in 2001 that Al-Qaeda was going to hit. In my book, Nostradamus, Premonitions of 9/11, I have all the I have accounts of all the reports that he got, all five of them, not just one. And he just ignored them. And they even talked about aerial hijackings using the planes as bombs. They just ignored it. And there's some kind of scary sides about that. If you read the manifestos that were being published in the neoconservative movement, neoconservative think tanks, one of the things that the one that was published in September of 2000, just a month before the first presidential debate of that cycle, talked about how a lot of the agenda they were seeking, if they could seek anybody who was fulfilling their agenda, Democrat or Republican, would be fine. And but he also said, we are not going to go very fast unless there is a Pearl Harbor moment, something that unites the nation, then we could rapidly move. And the movement was to take out a number of Middle Eastern and North African countries so that the United States strategically could, through nation destroying and rebuilding in the Middle East, make control of the oil. And so in that month when that paper came out, Bush was being heavily coached by all these neoconservatives, the who's who of neoconservatism, so he could be ready to sound like he almost knew what he was talking about foreign policy in the debate, because Al Gore was a pretty good debater. So when he was asked the question, what do you have, any plans for Iraq? And he looked at the questioner, and he smiled, and he leered, and he said, oh, yeah, we have a plan for Iraq. And when I saw that, I didn't know about this paper that had been published, and the people who published it coaching him. But later on, I realized, what is he onto? He's like, he has this idea. So I wrote, and it's confirmed in my Hoag Prophecy articles that you can see at Hoag Prophecy in the archives. You just the archive button at the top. And you just press it and you can see everything since 2000. I basically said, I looked at the two men, what kind of presidency they might have. And what I said about Bush essentially was this: halfway through his first term, there'd be some terrorist event that would make him go into the Middle East, put boots on the ground, and most likely conquer and occupy Iraq. It'd be very easy. They'd push over the military of Iraq, but then America would be in a quagmire in the desert, a Vietnam in the desert. And you know, the terrorist act, that might have been Iraq, I said, it might not have been. It's funny because this is the first thing out of Rumsfeld, Secretary of Defense's mouth when Pentagon was being hit by jets and the towers were being hit. He said, it's got to be Saddam Hussein. Of course, it wasn't. But it gave the excuse to do everything we did to basically destabilize the Middle East, and we're suffering from it ever since. And it actually has the potential of being the trigger point if there's a war with Iran that could start World War III in the next 4 years. But that's a little ahead of myself getting back to the situation. So Bush talked to God, and Bush also ended his in the affliction of the Great Recession that happened at the end of his administration. He is then followed by Barack Obama, who also has Neptune squared the sun. Now, his aspects were different, how he handled it. It was more elusive. A lot of politicians psychologically seek votes like men seek women. It's like wooing an audience. It has a sexual dimension to it, subconsciously. And this is what was playing on Obama, I contend. He was the black man who won the impossible, wooed the impossible audience twice to become president in two terms. When that happened, the classic thing that happens is when you win the impossible woman, the feeling's gone. The thrill is gone, as B.B. King would say. And so you then start looking for another challenge. So you kick that woman to the curb and go on. And he literally kicked 8 million people, well, not once but twice, who he built up as a cyberspace army of lobbyists of the people.
Right.
Brilliant idea. And he could have really gone, pressured Republicans and Democrats in the Congress with 8 million people emailing them all the time to, hey, get on the page, let's do it. And so he had this tool that no president ever had before. Brilliant idea. But when he won, he literally pulled the plug on him twice in 2012 as well. So what does he do a few weeks into his first term? He has the famous dinner with a lot of the right-wing media and Republican leaders, and he tries to, he's now doing his wooing of them. And in that dinner, they made it very clear to him that they did not want the black man in the White House. And that, so all those white guys were saying, we don't want you there, and we're going to work to make you a one-term president.
Right. Now,
if he was not under this delusion, he would have kind of said, well, thank you. It's always good to have a transparent enemy. And then he would go to his own base, his own two houses of Congress that he had, the executive branch, the ability to change the Supreme Court, and he would have used the media and the 8 million people to get the word out every day that they don't want the black man in the White House. And just drum it until it becomes clear that you work all of his wooing with the people he already wooed, but that's the problem. He already got those people. So his response was not to act on that wonderful intelligence of his enemy, just handing him the plan. He went instead and did, oh, no, I'll win him over. And he squandered those 2 years trying to get the Republicans on his side.
Right. He really thought he would win them over.
Yeah, and it's a sickness of such delusional astrological aspects. So
you would say it emerges out of his astrological.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
So the point is that the political assassination of Gore led to an illegitimate president followed that had this Neptune Sun Square Bush, and that was also followed by another president that had this affliction. And finally, we come to Trump. Trump wins an upset.
Well, we've just come to the end of our first hour, and so I think it's time for us to go to Trump, but in the third half hour.
Okay.
And before we do that, I'd like to ask you, if you could, to tell us exactly what people can find when they go to hogueprophecy.com. I've talked about it at the end of each break, but give us an idea of what's in it for them if they go to hogueprophecy.com.
Well, hogueprophecy.com, HOGUEPROPHECY.com, is what I have there is I have some sample-free newsletter-like articles that I always start each article wave, one or two a month. And then there's the option to become a subscriber for $60. You get 12 months of 150,000 words and about 120 articles, fully illustrated, downloaded to you in a PDF file. And lots of great illustrations and cartoons and things like that. And what you also get is you get to read my books before anybody else does. When a new book is out, I serialize it to my readers. This month, I'm serializing my 51st book, John Hogue's Presidential Predictions for 2020, Who Wins the Popular Vote and the Unpopular Vote.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Okay. And in the third half hour, that's exactly what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
So, Free Dreamlanders, thank you as always very much for being with us. I urge you to subscribe. I urge you to go to John's website and look over his stuff and subscribe. I have been doing that for years. It's well worth it. He is an absolutely unique voice in this world. John will be with us on October the 10th, Saturday at 11 a.m. in the subscriber video room answering your questions. Be sure and come to the subscriber video room on October the 10th, 11 a.m. Pacific, to have a one-on-one with John Hogue and other subscribers.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Our theme music is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Strieber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Strieber is your Dreamland host. And I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander.